Welcome to the Naked Tarot Podcast with your host, Janet Boyer. Get ready to strip down with the most provocative voice in tarot.
Hello, and welcome to the Naked Tarot Podcast. I'm your host, Janet Boyer, otherwise known as the Tarot Maven. I am the author of Back in Time Tarot, Tarot in Reverse, and the upcoming Naked Tarot, Sassy Strip Down Advice. With my artist husband, Ron Boyer, I'm also the co-creator of the Snowland Deck and the Coffee Tarot. I invite you to visit my website, janetboyer.com, where hundreds of reviews and other goodies await. Today we're going to be talking about the symbolism of the Scorpion in Tarot's Death card, as well as the Phoenix and the Sun card. And these are going to be seen through the lens of the death and resurrection of Jesus and the process of Holy Week. So there's going to be some biblical aspects to this podcast, but you really can't remove some of the Christian influence away from tarot, because if you look at the older decks, there are definitely Christian influences and symbolism right there. And so it behooves us as tarot readers and tarot enthusiasts to understand symbolism from a wide variety of backgrounds, whether it be Christian or pagan or the different ethnic symbolism, what have you, that can be brought into the whole milieu to help us to not only better understand the cards, but to draw on some more intuitive information. Should we be doing readings or meditative work for our own spiritual benefit? Now, during Holy Week, millions of Christians commemorate Christ's death on Good Friday, and they celebrate his resurrection on Easter, which they also call Resurrection Sunday. Now, from a mystical perspective, there is much wisdom and symbolism with the whole death and rebirth cycle. It's a cycle that no one escapes, and thus it touches us all. Now, in astrological terms, the sign of Scorpio and the eighth house of the zodiac, or the domain of death and regeneration. In the tarot, the death card can be correlated with the death of Christ and the metaphorical little deaths that we experience. While the Sun card can indicate the dawn of a new day, when enlightenment, empowerment, rebirth, and restored vitality warms us back to life. Also bearing a similarity to the death and resurrection of Christ is the legend of the Phoenix. In fact, in some decks, you actually see for the death card the Phoenix portrayed for this particular card. The Scorpion is a traditional sign of Scorpio. Now, when a scorpion loses its tail, it regenerates a new stinger. In addition, a Scorpio would be more likely to kill itself than allow another to do so. According to the Book of John, in the Bible, the incited crowd was calling for the death of Christ, shouting, "Crucify him, crucify him." And Pilate responds to the crowd that he finds no fault with Jesus, which is one of the reasons why he wanted to really wash his hands of it. But yet the mob responds, "We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God." And that's from John 19:7. Now Pilate responds to Jesus' silence by saying, "Are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have the power to crucify you and the power to release you?" But Jesus replies, "You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given to you from above." Jesus is echoing what he said in John 10:17-18, "Because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again." And this really reminds me of, you know, the scorpion that says, you know, "I'm in control of my own death here. You know, I'd take myself out before you would ever take me out." Now, the myth of the Phoenix is strongly associated with the sign of Scorpio, and the Phoenix is considered the symbol of highly evolved Scorpios. According to mythology, the Phoenix was the size of an eagle, with brilliant scarlet and gold plumage. Its lifespan was between 500 to 1,000 years, depending on which version of the myth you read, and only one Phoenix lived in the world at any given time. Now, the Phoenix would build a nest, sing a mournful dirge, and flap its wings until the nest caught on fire. Another legend has it that the sun god Ra was so moved by the Phoenix's bewitching funeral song that Ra stopped his chariot for a moment to listen. After listening to the song, Ra whipped his horse to continue and sparks flew from the horse's hooves, setting the nest on fire. And after being consumed in flames, a new phoenix arose from the ashes. So there's various myths out there about what really happens with a mythological phoenix, but the underlying theme is the same. Now, some myths say that the new phoenix emerges from the body of the old one. It embalms the parent in myrrh, encases them in an egg, and then takes it to the Egyptian sun temple. Interestingly, myrrh is a bitter, fragrant gum resin that's associated with suffering and was one of the gifts offered to the Christ child by the Magi. Myrrh also symbolizes power, strength, vitality, and mysticism. So as you can see, there's a lot of layers if you really look closely to some of the stories in the Bible and with the tarot. And I know some of us have had backgrounds in the Christian faith and have been burned, not necessarily in the good phoenix way. And so, some of us just totally reject the Bible or won't even bother revisiting it and to see it through new eyes of mysticism or even paganism. And I can understand that, but I've been able to make peace with everything and go back. And now I'm finding so many rich, interesting connections and layers, that I'm seeing now that I have a different type of spirituality. So I still find a lot of meat and treasure in there. And perhaps you will too with some of these podcasts. And if you decide to go back and delve into some of the complexities of the Bible. Now, just as the story of Christ details death and resurrection, so it is with the story of the phoenix. Even the egg itself from the legend of the phoenix represents new life. In fact, in the first century, some began associating the phoenix with Christianity. And the parallels are obvious with phrases like from John 3:3, where it says, "Unless a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God," which is attributed to Jesus. You have to understand back then, the concept of being born again, people couldn't really wrap their head around it because they're, physically you can't crawl back into your mother's womb. But see, that's when, you see through mystical eyes and you realize that the being born again is a symbolic, just like the egg or the phoenix, of the cycle of having scales fall off our eyes and being reborn into new understandings of our true self, our highest self, and the best version of ourself we can be in the spirituality of unity. Now, also, Jesus claimed to be the only Son of God, which is interesting because there, according to mythology, there's only one phoenix alive at any one time. So in Hermetic traditions, the phoenix was associated with alchemical transformation and transmutation. So while Good Friday is a day of suffering and death, the three-day process of spiritual alchemy transforms itself to resurrection and glorious rebirth where all things become new. So now we're seeing how, it also overlaps with alchemy if we see through mystical and symbolic eyes rather than, literal or even religious. Which this brings us to the death card. Now, in traditional tarot, the 13th major arcana card is death. And this card also represents transition, transformation, rebirth, and permanent change. The only thing that's guaranteed in life is change, and this is the hallmark of the death card. The astrological correspondence to the death card is Scorpio in the 8th house, as I said before, and so this card is about required change. It's not really optional. When death visits, whether it's literal or figurative ending, it is a required ending, and it's one that is inevitable. Now, if you don't change willingly, I found in life, not only as a former Christian minister and then, a counselor and tarot reader, but also in my personal life, if you don't change willingly, something will slam into your life that will force that change if it's time. It's interesting because Jesus once said in Matthew 21:44, "The person who falls on this stone will be broken. And whomever that stone falls, the person will be crushed." Now, I interpret that verse to mean that there is a way of wisdom and a way of woe. As you probably experience in your own life, there's kind of two ways usually to deal with change and challenges. You either kick and scream, or you embrace what's happening, go with the flow, and try to take the lessons, as they come, as opposed to fighting it tooth and nail. So in other words, if you know that a change needs to be made, now, this is, an inner knowing in your spirit and all the signs lead to it, and sometimes even just plain old common sense. For example, if your boyfriend's beating the shit out of you every, you know, other day. I mean, and if you know that a change needs to be made, but you insist on stasis and keeping things the same, the status quo, whether it's through security or whatever reason, but you know that it has to change, you may end up being crushed by the juggernaut of the will or the lightning bolt of the tower, God forbid, because of this resistance to death change. Now, Buddhism says that resistance, along with cravings, is the root of suffering. Now, granted, willing readjustment, adaptation, and surrender causes pangs of their own. I mean, that's even if you go with the flow, I mean, that process isn't easy either. But you end up being merely broken instead of destroyed. So let me explain it in another way. If a person falls from the roof of a house with their muscles rigid, he'll be more likely to get injured. However, if he relaxes or rolls into the fall, kind of like how a gymnast would, there's a greater chance of escaping serious injury. So same way with the winds of change, and when, you know, the death process comes knocking on a door, if you go with it, the process goes a little bit easier. Fight it, and it will wear you down. So thus, if you know you need to make changes, that is the energy of death, and you do not, the rock will fall on you, causing the process to be more devastating and difficult because it lacks the gradation that is a part of making conscious change willingly. And a real-life example, as I mentioned, would be domestic abuse. Yes, leaving the first time a partner hits you is difficult, especially if you lack economic independence or have children. But what would be the price if you stay as the resident punching bag? In Matthew 16:25, Jesus said, "For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." So there's a dichotomy here because with a death card, because if you seek to hold on to the familiar with an iron grip, the sweeping winds of change can be devastating. To surrender all to all that is, to source, God, whatever you, goddess, whatever you want to call a higher power, is to give up certainty. But in doing so, we gain life and fluidity. To attempt to stave off any change is to court losing the very things we clutch to so tightly. Because if you think about it, certainty is an illusion. We can't be certain about anything. And, you know, when we clutch so tightly to, you know, status quo, we lose that fluidity. You know, it's almost like it's a squeeze, a stranglehold. Now, built into the death card is the promise of new beginnings, because you can't have endings without beginnings. There's a saying that when God shuts a door, he or she opens a window. Now, unfortunately, our resistance to change often prevents us from pursuing our bliss and taking risks in relationships, career, finances, etc. Now, there is a hidden blessing when a death experience touches our life. We can exchange ashes for beauty, much like the mythological phoenix, but there cannot be a resurrection without the death. So often we want victory, blessings, growth, and profound spiritual experiences, but we don't want the death that may be necessary to make way for resurrection and rebirth. And Carolyn Mace explains this kind of theme beautifully in her books, Invisible Acts of Power and Energy Anatomy and Sacred Contracts. And I used to have a minister friend who passed away a couple of years ago. He was an older gentleman. And he would say, "Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die." And it was just hilarious the way he said it, but symbolically it's true. Now, if someone would have told me that the suffering and death of my husband to leukemia would be shortly followed by meeting my soulmate, having a precious son, and being the happiest I've ever been, I would have probably punched them. Because in the midst of suffering, you know, it is often inconceivable that days, you know, a day would follow the night, or that something good may follow. It's just when you're in that really difficult, nightmarish suffering, an experience of seeing a loved one suffer, and there's nothing that you can do about it, and, you know, and friends abandon you because they know that you know, he was a faith healer, and then here he is with this terminal illness. I mean, people couldn't handle it and they abandoned us. And so, you know, there was so many elements to the suffering. The fact that my first husband was an accomplished jazz trumpet player as well as a pastor. And within 2 days of being diagnosed of having leukemia, he was left in a bathroom alone with the nurses. If I would have been there, he wouldn't have been left alone. But it was such an emergency transfer to Pittsburgh that I had to go home and take care of a few things to get some clothes and stuff to come back to stay in the hospital with him for his weeks and weeks rounds of chemo and finding out what the heck was going on. Well, he collapsed and in the shower fell face first onto the porcelain toilet and smashed his front teeth, broke some of the bones and everything. And in some ways, that was more devastating, I think, to his psyche than the leukemia itself. So there's many, many layers of suffering. So when I speak of suffering, just know that this is coming from a person who has had actual suffering. Because there's nothing worse than somebody trying to teach on a topic and they have no idea what the hell they're talking about. Like some of these teachers that try to talk about, you know, parenting and childhood and spiritual aspects and whatever, and they're not even married, let alone have children. So it's like, don't even, you know. And so I just want to give you just a little background in case you don't know some of my story to realize that I have been through suffering, many, many dark nights. And so, you know, when you're going through that, it is often inconceivable that a day follows night. And if you just try to surrender with what is without the persistent self-pity and the feelings of victimization, I so wish I knew then what I knew now, but then maybe I wouldn't know now if I wouldn't have went through that. So it's kind of like a chicken and egg type of thing. So anyway, this new day, this takes us to the Sun card of Tarot. Now in the Tarot, the 19th card of the Minor Arcana is the Sun. It represents a portal, an opening in your life. The card is associated with things that are related to the Sun. Illumination, vigor, healthy self-regard, enlightenment, empowerment, rebirth, and newness. The work of the Sun card is to purify, cleanse, improve, and illuminate, and to burn off the chaff of painful thoughts and assumptions that can cause our suffering. Now, understandably, because of my background, I see this card as representing the resurrection of Christ, among other things, although some might argue for the Judgment card to represent the resurrection of Jesus, since that many tarot cards show. I think it's the Archangel Gabriel or Michael, Gabriel maybe, blowing a trumpet and people are supposedly resurrecting out of coffins with their arms outstretched towards heaven. So some people might consider Judgment as a part of the resurrection of Christ as opposed to the Son. But I tend to associate with the Son for the simple reason that Malachi 4:2 says, the Son of Righteousness, S-U-N, righteousness will rise with healing in his wings. And so Son, you know, Son of God, I just tend to connect those two. In fact, in my personal readings, when the Son comes up, a lot of times it represents my physical son. So that's just a personal association that I've made. And if it helps you, do use it. If not, you know, feel free to use Judgment for resurrection type issues. But anyway, especially with the Son of Righteousness shall rise with healings in his wings, that prophecy from the Old Testament, you know, I take that to connect with Jesus and his resurrection. Now, many believe this portion of scripture to be prophetic, referring to Jesus. Now, Son, S-U-N, S-O-N, doesn't appear to be a coincidence. And this picture is once again reminiscent of the ascending flaming phoenix. Also, Jesus is often associated with light and called the light of the world. And as you know, the sun is a hot star and it provides us light and life for our very existence and the existence of all living things on this planet. In terms of consciousness, the Sun card represents a mind awakened from sleep. Now, granted, it might be the tower experience that bridges death and the sun. Sometimes we have to have that tower slam to get from death to sun, but not always. Sometimes you can go from death to sun and experience a natural death and go right to the sun, but it's not a devastating tower experience necessarily. I have a friend and colleague who is a spiritual teacher and author. And I was so surprised recently to see her on Facebook saying that her and her partner of, oh, I don't know, 15 years, they seemed so in love and so supportive of one another. And she said that they just mutually decided to end their relationship. And it was done in love and respect and honor. They're still good friends. And she's moving across the country and starting her new life. And so, you know, there right there is kind of a death to the sun experience without the trauma of the tower. It's just for her, it was just a knowing and a realizing that this particular path had an end and it was time to go and do something else. And so you don't necessarily have the tower experience, such as, you know, somebody being diagnosed you know, with leukemia or having some kind of disaster hit your life, you know, to bridge the death in the sun. And too often we sleepwalk through life only to be rudely wakened by a death experience, you know, and the wide-eyed clarity that results from this awakening, you know, imagine cold water thrown in your face, is a ripe opportunity for the illumination of truth and light brought by the sun card. However, you have to stand in the furnace long enough to get the chaff burned off. Just glimpsing the light or getting a sunburn does not enlightenment bring. So you have to kind of walk in the light to be the light. The sun card is also associated with the astrological sign of Leo. And when I think of Leo, the mighty lion, I'm reminded of the verse from the highly symbolic and mystical book of Revelation, chapter 5, verse 5. But one of the elders said to me, "Do not weep. Behold, the lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has prevailed to open the scroll and to loose its seven seals." And it's interesting because Jesus is often called the Lion of Judah. So we're seeing a connection again to the sun card. In the Chronicles of Narnia series by Christian theologian C.S. Lewis, the lion Aslan is an anthropomorphic nod to Jesus, because this animal too, in those books, if you remember them, dies for a kingdom and then is resurrected. I love those stories from when I was younger. So lastly, this brings us to oneness. The last prayer that Jesus prayed in Gethsemane was that they all may be one as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be one in us. That's from John 17:21. So as Christ was awaiting his imminent crucifixion and death, he was praying for the oneness of all humanity. Now, when I see the cross, I'm reminded that the arms point in two directions, vertically, meaning man being reconciled with God or the source and to the divine nature within, and horizontally, which is man reconciled with man, the realization that all is one and none is separate or truly alone. And it's interesting because I'm reading The Law of One right now, that supposedly channels a being named Ra, and that is the underlying theme and message of those beings of the raw material is oneness and love. Now, perhaps one day, as the corporate body of humanity, will die to the illusion of separateness and be reborn into that totality of light, love, unity, and life, past the darkness of confusion and the mist of despair that often surrounds us through a death experience, especially as we stand on the precipice of the unknown, debating whether to free fall or fight for our lives. And this is the ultimate message of the death and resurrection of Christ, all accepting love, oneness, and truth through the blazing, illuminating sun. So I'm recording this the week before Holy Week, and for those who celebrate, Happy Easter. For those who celebrate Ostara, Happy Ostara. And I hope you found this podcast on the Scorpio and Scorpion and death and the Phoenix and the sun and how that connects with Jesus and the death and resurrection. I hope you found it insightful and helpful. And I thank you for listening to the Naked Tarot Podcast. Again, this is your host, Janet Boyer, janetboyer.com. And I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.